Let me take you to the amphitheater inside the Seaport World Trade Center in Boston. It's pitch dark, except for the stage with a dim spotlight on a woman dressed in black, sitting in front of an upright piano. She begins to play Johann Sebastian Bach. Seconds later, her face is suddenly revealed on a video screen on top of the piano fallboard. Ah, it's a projection of a video, actually. Now comes something magical, as you begin to see a bunch of piano keys moving by themselves, playing the second theme from the same piece. The sound syncs perfectly with those dancing keys and her hand and body movements on that screen and on the stage. It looks like she's playing a duet with her reflection. The piece is a fugue from Bach's Contrapuntal, a musical form with multiple voices and themes. It's a virtual three-hand, then four-hand piano playing. This mind-blowing invention and presentation at TEDx Boston is the result of a research project called the Mirror Fugue. This is Xiao Xiao, a pianist and a technologist with a PhD from MIT Media Lab. In this episode, Xiao tells me her thinking behind the Mirror Fugue, her story of becoming an artist and computer scientist, and her experience of growing up in New Orleans after leaving Nanjing, China, at the age of 8. I'm Mabel Chan, and this is One in a Billion, a podcast about Chinese millennials in America. Xiao Xiao, welcome, first of all, to One in a Billion.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, this is fantastic. You are the one who invented this mirror fugue. Walk us through what it looks like and where did you draw inspiration ideas from?
Yeah, so, well, mirror fugue is basically, I've always been quite entranced by the reflections on the surface of a lacquered black grand piano, where on the fallboard, which is the vertical surface in front of the keys, you can see the reflection of the keyboard and also your hands. And one day I was practicing, this is like 2008, and I just had this thought of, wouldn't it be quite lovely if you could play a duet with your own reflection or with somebody else's reflection, maybe somebody from the past or from somewhere else in the world or even someone who's no longer around.
With that idea in mind, she began doing research as a graduate student at MIT.
After some iterations of ugly prototypes, Yamaha took interest in the project and loaned me a Disclavier piano, which is their version of the player piano. And so I did some tricks with projection mapping, and I made a system where I project onto the keys and onto a modified version of the music stand so that you see the reflection of a pair of hands and the reflection of the pianist's upper body on the piano. So that when you're sitting in front of it and the piano is playing by itself, it looks but also feels viscerally like there's somebody in front of you. You really feel the sense of presence of this virtual pianist who's not there.
Well, this is very interesting because I also play the piano. When I play the piano at any age, especially now, I am so busy learning the piece. Right? Learning the music. I want to make sure I hit the right note. So I have a very singular, narrow-focused agenda, right? Learn and then play, perform, and hopefully I'd be good at it. For you, when you're playing, your eyes are looking at something else, like the way you've just described, and then you start imagining. So my question is, where did that come from?
Sure. But you know, to make it sound a little bit less magical, I think that I came up with this idea while I was practicing the piano, probably because at that point, I kind of relearned the art of piano playing when I was 22. I was a little bored and my mind started wandering.
Xiao wants to find a better or more enjoyable way to learning music. That quest would later become a focus of her research.
I feel like when you're stuck with the sheet music, trying to slavishly follow all the little black dots, you're missing that sense of movement. The sense of gesture, the sense of movement is essential for any musical piece to express something. With something like Mirror Fugue, it brings the physicality and the physical expression and the emotional gestures of a master pianist or any pianist a lot closer. And I feel like it's almost like the way that a baby learns how to speak, where you're immersed in an environment. It's not just about the words, it's about the emotion behind the words and what you're trying to express and communicate. It's the same with learning music and learning the piano.
So how did the piano first catch her fancy?
How I really got started with music was that my grandmother played the piano since she was a child, and my uncle gave my grandmother a present shortly after I was born, which was a piano. And at around the same time, my father gave my grandfather a present, which was a sound system. And so I grew up with my grandparents surrounded by music, where my grandmother would play all the time and my grandfather would put on a lot of classical music on the sound system. And my grandmother started me in piano lessons when I was 4 years old.
If the piano was her first love, the computer would be a close second. Xiao also had a role model who is a computer scientist.
I think that actually also ran in my family because my father studied computer science. He was one of the first generation of computer scientists in China, because when he applied for college or took the university tests in 1978, which you might know as one of the years that's super competitive. 77 and 78, this is the end of the Cultural Revolution. Everybody was taking the test, so he got in that year to Harbin Institute of Technology.
Wow, that part of the story in terms of your father's talent, and you picked that up as well.
Yeah, but you see, it's a little bit more roundabout than it seems. So I can tell the story of my life in such a way as if everything were just almost predestined. It just falls into place because I grew up in New Orleans and I grew up with the piano in the home and my dad was a computer scientist and I started all these things when I was very young. It's tempting to tell the story in this way because everything seems so smooth and round and easy. It's like the Hollywood film version. But really, I'm giving you a simplified version, but that's not even completely how it happened, because growing up, I didn't really learn how to program for my father. Like, even though we had a computer early when I was growing up in elementary school, which is earlier than a lot of millennials having had computers, I wasn't one of those hacker kids who just learned C++ at age 10 and became a hacker, you know. I have friends who are like that from college, but I wasn't like that.
Xiao began to learn computer science in eighth grade. The first programming language she learned was Pascal.
I learned Pascal, but we also drew pictures, made games, made little interactive stories, little quizzes, and I thought that it was fantastic. It was great fun. And part of what I loved about the computer was how you can make anything you want with it. And so much of it was solving problems, which is also quite addictive. The following year, I wanted to take the AP, the Advanced Computer Science class. But the teacher wouldn't let me because I think it was because I was a girl. I wasn't let into the class and I felt like it killed my momentum a bit.
But that didn't kill her dream to pursue computer science and music.
At what point did computer collide with your interest in music? Both are very time-consuming endeavors, in addition to schoolwork.
Yeah, well, okay, so music was always there. It wasn't always the most positive thing in my life. There were times when my parents had to yell at me to practice because I just didn't want to, because I didn't think it was interesting enough. One of the biggest motivations for me to have continued, I hate to say it, but it's actually because I started it when I was so young and I was ashamed of quitting.
Is that right?
Yeah, and then I started doing piano competitions and I started doing okay in some of them and catastrophically in other ones. And at some point, my ego or my sense of self was so tied to this identity of being this person who's good at the piano, even though I never really felt like I was that good because I never really felt like I understood music. I was always having memory slips.
You were competitive.
Yeah, I think maybe it was more about winning at that point than about the beauty of the music. And honestly, it wasn't until it really wasn't actually until I started my master's when I was 22, when I met my amazing teacher that I've had for the past 8 years, that I started the journey of really understanding music.
At MIT, Xiao met Dunal Fox, a classical jazz composer, improviser, and pianist who was teaching at MIT as a visiting professor.
And it turns out that one part of learning to become a good musician is to actually express real emotions, not just following the dynamics markings on the page, but actually feeling something or conjuring a feeling and channeling it through the sound that you're outputting on your instrument.
In her TEDx talk in San Diego, she talks about how music learning is like building a city in your mind. You have to roll up your sleeves and get down to the nitty-gritty.
A sound city, as I've learned from my musical mentor Dunal Fox, is not just facade and surface brilliance. We start with a solid foundation of rhythm, and we must feel what it's like to be the building as we put them together piece by piece. When something doesn't quite fit, we don't just repeatedly bash it with a blunt hammer, hoping to smooth away the mistake in the practice room. Rather, we have to go inside, inspect the structure to figure out the root cause.
Well, my teacher told me that in order to do that, you have to actually let yourself feel and proverbially open the floodgates. And I was kind of like, I don't want to open the floodgates. Like, my emotions are fine where they are. Like, my issues are fine where they are. You know, I don't want to deal with them. But, you know, maybe part of it was just motivated by the desire to become a better musician, but also to understand what it takes to learn to become a better musician. I was like, okay, I'm gonna do it. Like, I'm gonna dig in there and open these issues and try to confront them face to face.
What are these issues? Xiao took us back to China.
I was born in Beijing, but I left Beijing when I was only 1 year old, and I moved to Nanjing. And this is because my father got a researcher position abroad for a couple of years. And at that point, my mother worked and couldn't take care of me by herself. And so they sent me to live with my grandparents. So this was originally only going to be for a couple of years. But when I was three, my mother also got a research position, this time in the United States, in New Orleans. My mother ended up finding a way to stay in New Orleans, and my father came too after a few years.
So Xiao was left with her grandparents in Nanjing. They raised her until she was 8 years old and flew with her to New Orleans to be reunited with her parents.
I didn't see my mother from basically when I was one until when I was eight. I mean, I saw her twice a year from one to three, and then never from three to eight. And I didn't see my father from one to three, saw him twice a year from three to five, and never from five to eight. So by the time that I came to America, I had forgotten what they looked like. I suppose that I always felt a bit, I don't want to say resentful, maybe a little bit resentful. I mean, I don't hate my parents at all. They've been perfectly loving. I was never the rebellious teenager to throw tantrums against my parents because of this. But there's always, well, I don't know. I suppose it perhaps manifests more in relationships with people, right? I'm always quick to assume that people don't love me anymore, or that my friends don't want to be friends with me anymore. I suppose that mirror fugue was actually ultimately about memory. This idea of being able to capture the past on an instrument. And I've recorded people who have now passed away, like Alan Toussaint and Marvin Minsky. And when you're sitting in front of them, it's uncanny. It feels like you're communing with them even though they're no longer there. I suppose that for me, making Mirror Fugue and telling the story through Mirror Fugue, well, I can't really go back in time to talk to myself in the past, but it's almost like I wish that through the piano I can talk to myself as a child practicing and just tell her that, you know, it's okay. Everything will be okay.
Over time, Xiao has taught herself the essence of being artistically technical and mindfully human through interacting her inner self with music. She emphasized that in her talk at TEDx Boston.
As for me, it took me years to realize that while the intellectual mode cannot be ignored in music, it alone is not sufficient. For music must be in the body and come from the heart.
Despite the childhood trauma of feeling abandoned by her parents, Xiao has never been afraid to be herself. In high school, she didn't really fit in.
In high school, actually, I was totally the weird kid. Like, people weren't really nice to me because I was weird. I think that I've always found it hard to stick to the norm. Maybe it's because I've just had a hard time perceiving what the norm was. So in high school, like, I never knew what the trends were or what brands of clothing I was supposed to wear to be cool. You know, like, I just didn't even begin to have an idea of how to be normal. And so because I didn't know how to be normal and to be accepted. And let's face it, everybody wants to be accepted. Like, I had no other choice but to find myself.
She describes herself as a hand raiser, like Hermione from Harry Potter.
Well, except for a more abrasive version, because Hermione is a sweetheart.
Even before she could speak English well, she found a way to participate.
I can always raise my hand and volunteer to solve math problems on the board.
Where did this courage come from?
Perhaps it's a personality trait, and perhaps, I don't know, my family always kind of likes to scold me a little bit for being too fearless. You know, like, they're like, you don't have any sense of danger, like, you're always putting yourself out there, traveling by yourself, like, doing things like, what if you get hurt, what if you... But I don't know, and you know, we can psychoanalyze me and try to figure out where it comes from. I think perhaps due to the fact that I had to be separated from my parents at quite a young age, you learn to have a tougher skin and you learn to be more okay with being on your own and being the only one doing something.
I ask her if she ever felt restrained as a woman in STEM.
Yeah, I've never really felt the pressure. And I also feel like as a woman, well, sure, I recognize that there are immense challenges for women in technical fields. But I think that for myself, I've been perhaps lucky to have never felt directly the opposing forces dragging me down.
Xiao attributes her sense of empowerment to strong women in her family.
I think that also I've been kind of lucky in that two of my grandmothers were physics professors. My grandmother from Shandong province, she and her best friend, which is my other grandmother, and their another one of their friends just went by themselves to Beijing to go to university. And in that era, I think it was quite fearless of them. My mother was the first one who came to the United States to make a life for us. And so I think that I've just had a lot of strong women as role models in my life where I thought it was normal for women to be like this.
It's clear to me how passionate Xiao feels about her mission behind various projects using technology to create immersive, interactive learning experiences.
For instance, I'm actually collaborating with one of my friends from Hong Kong, who's also an artist, on a set of virtual reality binoculars that will overlook a historic courtyard. And when you look inside, you see virtual scenes from the past. And so this is kind of a way for history to come alive. Well, this is entertaining. It's educational. It shows people what life was, snippets, a vignette of what life was like in those different time periods. It's more interesting than reading text on a wall, I suppose. So that's one.
Another one, Andante, is designed to make piano learning more fun for kids by creating a sense of movement behind the notes.
I program these little animated characters, these little light silhouettes that walk and dance on the piano keys. And so, yes, on one hand, they do show you what notes to play because they step on them. But on the other hand, you also get a sense of the space between the notes and the lines, the motion between the notes in the way that they move, in the way that they look. You can have a fat guy who's moving more heavily, or a sneaky guy, or birds with long legs that jump over keys. I think it's nice to start on the right foot to understand that actually the way that children naturally learn, which is to explore, to be okay with making mistakes, to be okay with making a mess, to be curious, is actually the best way to learn. And you just have to kind of not get too torn up about failing sometimes and to just enjoy the process. I suppose that the current education system is much like the typical classical approach to music, where it's all about getting things right. But actually, I think people learn more when they get things wrong.
And that's an idea that Xiao keeps going back to.
The ideas that I'm most fascinated about is how people learn and how people can become better learners. Mm-hmm. And particularly the connection between ways of thinking in computer science and ways of thinking in learning music. Because everybody talks about how important it is these days to learn technical subjects like STEM, and especially computer science, because computational thinking, learning how to break down a problem into smaller, more manageable parts, or learning how to debug, are super important skills, not only for programming, but just for thinking in general. I feel like these skills, from my experiences learning music, the good way, not the old classical way, these hallmarks of computational thinking are also very much present in the process of learning to play a musical instrument and in a lot of creative fields. My mission is I would like more people to recognize that, because I think that education in general would be much more enriched if people could just see more connections between the disciplines.
Thank you, Xiao, for sharing your story of creating a life with technology and beauty. Now, we want to hear from you. Send us your comments, rate and review us on iTunes or SoundCloud. Pitch us a story, find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. If you enjoy our podcast, will you consider becoming a supporting member? Donating is easy. Just go to our website, oneinabillionvoices.org. Donate. In our next and final episode of Season 2, we turn to you, our listeners, to be our storytellers. It is that time of year, reflecting on 2017. What's weighing on your mind? What concerns you the most? The present, the past, or the future? Stay tuned for our next episode. One in a Billion is
Pallavi Katamasu,
Eric Liao,
Brian Latwinowicz,
Sarah Zhu.
It is an independent production of One in a Billion Productions, a nonprofit educational media group in Kendall Square, Cambridge, Massachusetts.